CRJ 227, this is week number 3. And as promised, for week number 3, we are going to get into the vehicle stop. We're going to expand our stop discussion from last week to include frisk, vehicle stops, protective sweeps, and then define arrest. The first thing I need you to do before you continue to listen is both go back and review Terry versus Ohio and the New York City Police Department guidelines on stop and frisk and the ACLU's report on stop and frisk practices. Just review it. You don't have to read it all again unless you want to read it all again, but you do need to review it. If you haven't read it, you're fudging through on this, go read it. The next thing, within the discussion or assignment forum for this week, I provided a resource, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center's visor card for vehicle stops. It's a great resource. Most departments issue something similar or have something similar in vehicles. It probably needs to be updated, but it's just a guide. It's something that you can see, and it's something that you should be aware of. We talk a lot about procedure and both the procedure expected by law and then department's procedures, the procedures that they will ask you to follow. You should follow those. And obviously with this one, this is what New York had provided at one point in order to, or the feds have provided at one point in order to help police departments follow the expected legal procedure for vehicle stops. And then finally, the 2019 case of Nieves v. Bartlett. And then there's 3 different presentations that you'll make. And you can make those presentations in one forum post for convenience sake. So go ahead and read through those and then follow those assignment expectations. After completing the review of last week's reading and then the additional items I provided for this week. Well, this week covers many topics related to stop through arrest. I want to focus my comments, at least in part, on vehicle stops. It's just the nature of modern policing that police operate out of a vehicle for the most part. Very few of you who intend to go into policing will go into policing and walk a beat, at least not of any significance for any particular point of your career. For a long time, police have been put in vehicles. Typically, in our region, one vehicle, one officer. It's just the nature of modern policing that police operate out of vehicles. If you think about the facts of the Terry case, the circumstances were better served by an officer on foot. That detective being on foot was able to see the things that raised his suspicions. Vehicles are more conducive towards responding to things after they're already in action or have occurred. Vehicle stops are unique in a way and not so unique in others from the types of stops we worked on or looked at last week. The majority of vehicle stops come with probable cause to stop. Some sort of traffic violation is typically either witnessed or reported. And my personal legal advice to you is it's better that you witnessed it. In most cases today, those violations, if moving, can be and should be recorded. Sometimes, too many times, for my ability to drive peacefully, the probable cause comes from the officer knowing the driver and suspecting and then confirming the driver doesn't have a driver's license. That happens a lot. But in any event, in most vehicle stops, it's something above reasonable suspicion that something has occurred or will occur. It's that something did occur. And that something that did occur was witnessed by the police officer. The individual was speeding, and that was recorded. The individual was driving across the center line, driving erratically. It was seen. Went through a red light. Okay? Whatever it was that led up to the stop, typically, not always, typically, it's how we get there. At that point, the stop results in either a citation, a warning, or a ticket, or further investigation leads to probable cause to arrest. If there is probable cause to arrest, we move to issues we will cover in the course, but we really cover in greater detail in the evidence course, search and seizure. Those of you who have taken CRJ 230 have a great idea about what I'm talking about because we spent a lot of time on search and seizure issues. Those of you who have yet to take that course should take it. It's offered in the fall. And you'll learn all about, in great detail, everything you need to know to be competent in search and seizure. If the stop leads to an arrest, the driver being taken into custody, the vehicle can then be impounded, and that's the case in most municipalities. Under Illinois law, a car or vehicle in any municipality may be impounded for the following reasons. The vehicle was used to commit a crime with the owner's consent. Not that the crime was committed with the owner's consent. The vehicle was used with the owner's consent. And essentially, unless that owner has reported that vehicle is stolen, they've given consent. They allow the vehicle to be used. They didn't prevent the vehicle from being used. All sorts of circumstances I'd be happy to talk to you about my experiences doing vehicle impoundments and the excuses that come with those impoundments. Another one is the vehicle was used to commit a sex offense. In fact, I started hearing vehicle impounds in the mid-1990s. And at the time, Peoria was one of the first communities to enact a vehicle impound ordinance, and the focus of vehicle impounds at that time was sex offenses. In particular, prostitution that occurred around the Morton Square neighborhood, just beyond the north end of the downtown area, on the other side of north of Interstate 74. And so, in those cases, police officers being decoy prostitutes would be around the street and in the vicinity where prostitutes would be, and persons inclined to be Johns, the persons who solicit prostitution from prostitutes, would pull up and make an offer for a sex act to the typically a female undercover police officer, but not always. And that undercover police officer acting as a prostitute would direct that individual to drive around the corner and into an alley, a dead-end alley. And when they drove around the corner and into the dead-end alley, other police cars would close off the alley and the individual would be arrested. Now, you name the vendor, the employer, the delivery driver, the company, we probably had people, because it's typically during the day, people from all walks of life while working in their employer's vehicles, in their personal vehicles, having dropped their spouse off at St. Francis to visit somebody or to have a test or something, and they, while they're waiting, they drove down to solicit a prostitute. But their vehicles would be impounded, and there was typically a fine in the amount of $500 plus the storage fees for the vehicle. Now, I said I started that in the mid-1990s, about 1996, and it's still most departments, or most ordinances, it's still $500 to get your vehicle out. The difference is, all these years later, is people plunk down $500 like it's $50. If a vehicle is abandoned or stolen or unattended, it can be impounded. DUI arrest, if it's likely the driver will commit the violation again or if the vehicle can't be safely parked, and a lot of departments just have, as a matter of department policy, that they impound the vehicles. Obstructing the highway or creating a hazard on the highway, or driving on a suspended or revoked license or without proof of insurance. Those all lead to, under the state law, an opportunity for vehicle impounds. And then you may have other things added by ordinance. Under those ordinances, the owner of the vehicle subject to the fine, as I said, typically $500 plus towing and storage fees. The owner can request a hearing held under preponderance of the evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt. The fine amount, as I said, has been that $500 range for well over 20 years. And people plunk it down like it was $50. And then, as just a go over again, when we say owner's consent, we mean that the owner allowed the vehicle to be used by that individual or someone else who exercised control over the vehicle without the owner's, or with the owner's consent. In other words, it wasn't stolen. The intent or public policy of these ordinances is to cause vehicle owners to be responsible for their vehicles and the people they allow to operate those vehicles to be responsible, or to know who they've allowed to operate their vehicle. As some of you may know from personal experiences, and many of you will find out, vehicles and the negligent or unlawful use of vehicles really cause far more criminal and monetary damage in society than guns. As much as we hear about gun violence and murder and all of that, if we're to take it in, you know, total impact to people and total impact in dollars to society, it's sometimes with more catastrophic consequences, and, you know, all we have to do is look at terrorist activities and the things that people do with vehicles in that regard. So this is some additional food for thought to mull over and as you present cases and discuss. I think that you really have to keep in mind how vehicles are different, what they do or how they make things different. At the end of the day, you know, the difference in the stop is that somebody's mobile. They're in the vehicle. It's much different than they're walking down the street. But it is something you need to be aware of, and that's why I take the time to focus on that more than anything. Regarding use of force, or our secondary focus this semester on use of force, I want you to just kind of think about it. I don't need you to do anything, but I want you to think about, in all the cases that we've seen, the things we've been concerned with regarding use of force. How many of those cases, in fact, in some way, involved a vehicle? someone being stopped in a vehicle, somebody being taken out of a vehicle, somebody trying to get away in a vehicle or get in a vehicle and being prevented from getting in the vehicle. How many? And just think about it. Just review that in your own mind. And as you do, hopefully you think about all the things I just said about vehicles, the reality of vehicles, in, especially for those of you going into law enforcement, the reality of vehicles and how they play a part in the police doing their job. And how it is different if you think about the Terry case and the facts of the Terry case and the circumstances of the Terry case and the serious nature of the things that were prevented in the Terry case. That's it for week three. We go to the halfway point of the semester next week. And when we do, we are going to break down the Fourth Amendment and the exclusionary rule. Again, for many of you or those of you who have taken CRJ 230, you're going to be the experts. And I'll be looking to you to be the experts. And some of this will be familiar to you. But it's really good stuff, and it's going to be in the context of procedure. I appreciate y'all. I appreciate everything you've done. I appreciate what you're doing this summer. Keep up the energy. As I just noted, it's going fast.